Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. It's that time again. Welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 160. I'm your host, Beam Weeks, and with me, not as usual, he's not over in his usual corner, is Mr. Stephen Jeeves. Stephen, where are you?
I am in Birmingham, Alabama today. I'm in Grandview Medical Center. I had a heart operation this morning, had a watchman installed. And it ran about 8 hours longer than it was supposed to, so I was hoping I'd be clearer tonight than I am. But now I'm sitting in a hospital room, hooked up to my podcast gear, and just want to alert you. You might hear a nurse come in, make some noise or something like that. Hey, I'm not going to miss tonight's guest or anything. It's one of my favorite guests, one of our favorite authors, and I'm here. Nothing can stop me. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I cannot complain. I had a nice, productive day. We had some beautiful weather out, spent a little bit of time outside, and did a little bit of work editing some people's books and getting ready for the show.
All right. Cool. Well, let's get to it. We've got some books coming out, people. We've got Mermaid Cove by author M.C. Howard. For this one, she's doing it as Maureen Howard, Ph.D. She's using different bylines for her different books. And this is a collection of 34 multimedia posters that were made of exotic mermaids for the Yacht de Gras boat raid poster announcements. And it's the 25th anniversary of that. So everybody in the organization down there has been asking, hey, how can we get these mermaid posters? Well, we're going to put out a book full of them called Mermaid Cove, and that's going to be pretty soon here. We've got another one we're probably going to have out by about this weekend or so. This is called Celebrate 98, it's been 25 years since the championship season of the Tennessee Vols football team. We're talking college football, for those of you who aren't that familiar. And this is from Off the Hook Sports' Dave Hooker. Now, he's up there in a place called Chattanooga, Tennessee. I know some of you haven't heard of it. Some of you know the Chattanooga Choo Choo Train. We're going to see if tonight's guest has heard of this place, Chattanooga. I suspect he probably has, too. But that's called Celebrate 98, about the Tennessee Vols. And it's all the behind-the-scenes story, you know, Al Lewis and Peyton and all, you know, all those people. But check it out. Hopefully by next week, this thing will be in for sale.
Yeah. All right, we've also got coming out on the 28th of August, The Dayang, book one in the Dayang trilogy by M.C. Howard. I'm currently working on editing her second book in the trilogy. That's already done. It's just got to be edited. That's called The Degree. But right now, for August 28th, The Dayang by M.C. Howard will be out. So you can go over and pre-order right now.
It's a thriller, so suspense thriller.
Yeah.
That's a cool story.
Yeah, it's a definitely good story. Now, listeners, if you want to be part of the show tonight, if you have a comment or a question for tonight's guest, here's how you can do that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right.
Well, we've got another book that we just put out into pre-sale last week, which should be released next week. We're doing a real short pre-sale on this one. It's called I Won't Be Your Scapegoat. And this is by tonight's guest, Chattanooga area NBC News anchor, radio personality, newspaper columnist, and all-around media maven in the Chattanooga, Tennessee, David Carroll. And this one's I Won't Be Your Scapegoat, and it's a hilarious look at goofy mistakes that are made in social media, misspellings, misused words, things like that. And some of them are graphic, some of them are the text, and David has a lot of fun with it, too, because he makes some snarky comments afterwards that make it even funnier yet. So that you can be ordered now. Get over there, people, and order your copies. I Won't Be Your Scapegoat by David Carroll.
All right. And we've also got Daddy Yo-Yo, which is a children's book. This is by Janice Toney. And this book is a picture book, but it's kind of a young adult type of book. It's got lessons on bullying and why it's not a good thing to be a bully. So Daddy Yo-Yo by Janice Toney is out now. If you got children or tweens and early teens, grab a copy. And if you want to know what other books are coming out, because every week you tune in, we got these new books that we talk about. We've got all the books that we have coming down the pipeline. They can be found in our newsletter. And if you're not subscribed to our newsletter, why not? Here's how you can subscribe if you're not.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Inquiry with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What? All right. Listeners, especially you that are writers, we are soliciting short stories and short essays for our Fresh Ink Group anthology of short stories and personal life essays, short essays. If you want to submit one of your short stories or a short essay, you can do so at Contact Fresh Ink Group, and we will get it. There's another place, isn't there, Stephen? Do we have another link for that?
Yeah, I believe so, but we'll put it in the newsletter.
All right. Another reason to get subscribed to the newsletter.
I mean, if you want to submit directly, contest@freshinkgroup.com. Just use the email and attach it as an attachment.
All right. Stephen?
So, you got a newsletter plug?
I just did that. Are you not?
Oh, okay.
You didn't hear that? You got messages in there tuning you up?
I'm only hearing some things. So let's go to the top 25 print best sales from Fresh Ink Group right now. And number 25 slot, Slingshot, Building the Largest Machine in Human History. This is the first of used to be the Star Child trilogy. Now it's the Star Child saga. It's going to have four books in it. We're going to have the second one, Daedalus Files, out sometime in the next week or so. But that's Slingshot, Building the Largest Machine in Human History by Wilkes Croft. Above that, we've got Still Not Enough, Minority Millennials in the Workplace by Janelle A. Jordan, and that's a look at all the dynamics of what's going on in the changing workforces these days and how minorities are affecting that. Above that, Figuratively Speaking, Thesaurus of Expressions and Phrases, and we're going to play a commercial for that during the show tonight, so you can learn more about that then. But J.S. Looney's got two of these word kind of books, and they're doing really well in India as well as the U.S. Above that, we've got How to Keep Driving, the Instructor's Edition by Kenneth Lundquist. We also put out a Parent's Edition of the same thing. Of that, Time Past, Time Present, Essays, Stories, and Reminiscences of What I Learned for the First Time Around by Mark Allen North. Now, this is one of our earliest books. This book has got to be, 15 years old, something like that? And
oh,
it's
yeah.
been making surge lately and getting back into our bestseller list. So it shows you how when you're doing print on demand, books can live as long as you keep bringing attention to them and get some interest out there in them. Ben Graff is one of our authors, and one of his offerings is a four-book series, a dystopian future sci-fi kind of a thing, and each of them is into a season name. This one is Into Spring, The Next Generation is next on our list, and I think a couple more. Yeah, I see three slots above that is Into Winter, so people are picking up that series again, too, and that's been out for quite a while. Now, above that, Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase number one. We just talked about that. At least allegedly we did. I didn't hear all of it. But that's the one where we're looking for stories. We're also looking for short essays, which are true stories, where you try to say something poignant. And if you can't find any other way, contest@freshinkgroup.com. Send them in. Now, we've got an author, Robert McKenzie. He's got a five-book series called The Chair, and the first three are out. The third one just came out about a month ago. And I'm seeing now that it is doing pretty well on the list here. The first book, volume next up. I think the other two are going to be above it. Speaking of Robert G. Willis Croft, The Orc Federation, To the Stars, The Second Chronicle. Now, Robert just won a Cal Award, Colorado Authors League Award, first place, very prestigious award. We've got information about that in the newsletter, so go check that out, too. This is The Orc Federation, To the Stars, The Second Orc Chronicle. That follows his first Orc Chronicle, which is called Icicle. And as I scroll up a little bit here, I see that it's two slots above. So both of those are doing very well, too. And we skip over those, and we've got one. Now, here's somebody you never heard of, David Carroll's Hello Chattanooga. And it's the hardcover edition that's doing better than the softcover edition. And this is a very, very thick book, a lot of pages, and a fairly costly cover price in order to cover those kind of printing costs. And yet the hardcover is outselling the softcover. And we'll be curious to ask our guests and see what kind of mix he gets when he's out making appearances if people are looking for cards. Next up, Shipwrecked and Rescued, The City of Bangor. That's the story of 240 1920s Chryslers that were being shipped across Lake Superior and never made it. Wound up with a shipwreck. They rescued the crew, but not the cars. But Walter P. Chrysler himself, he wanted those 240 Chryslers back, so he hired a crew to go get them. Did it work? Buy the book. This is a very interesting story. It's historical. It's full of all kinds of pictures and anecdotes and behind-the-scenes stuff. So, Shipwrecked and Rescued by Larry Jorgensen. How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida by A.K. Wingler. She has three of these food truck books out so far, and they include Georgia and Tennessee as well. If you're interested and have any interest in food truck business, you've got to start with A.K. Wingler's books because she tells you how to do it. She puts the forms and stuff in there. She breaks it down to what the requirements are for each state. Next one is There Must Be Something in the Mythology of the Fourth Generation, Descendants of Green Pond After the Emancipation by Abigail Miriam Hamilton Eugenie. That's a look at black folks who grew up in the Low Country in the Carolinas and they went on and accomplished a very impressive great thing. So we profile all these people and talk about that. Now here's a fun one, My Three Wishes, Memoir of a Hawaiian Dancer Whose Family Traveled the World by Kanoi Kay. She's full of pictures on this book, too, and she's got all kinds of cool stories about having her whole family involved and actually forming a dance troupe in Hawaii and then going on to travel the world. Next up, I mentioned Bicycle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Order Chronicle by Robert G. Willis-Croft. Speaking of Willis-Croft, next one above that is Operation Ivy Bells, a Mac McDowell mission. That's number one out of the four Mac McDowell missions so far. They are submarine Cold War thrillers with Mac McDowell. He's a cool character. You're going to like to know him. Mentioned Larry Delaney Into Summer. So that's three of his dystopian Into books. Above that, paperback edition of The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by Mark Herndon, who for nearly three decades played drums with the super country group Alabama. And then that kind of went sour when they were doing their farewell tour, and things got real weird. Lawsuits flew, and lots of hard feelings were had. Mark tells all the stories, warts and all, and he does it with style and class. He takes the high road. He admits his own mistakes, and he talks about what life behind the scenes is being a super group is. And it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of drama. Nearly died in a plane crash. I mean, that book, check it out. Now, we're down to the top six here. In the number six spot, Janice D. Toney's Daddy Yo-Yo and the Legendary Marble Tournament is being mixed. That is an illustrated chapter book. So it's actually chapters. It's a story for young and older children. Next up, American Agony, the opioid War Against Patients in Pain. I'd like to say that five times fast. American Agony, the Opioid War Against Patients in Pain by Dr. Helen Worrell. And that's a look at the politics behind what's going on in enforcement with doctors possibly overprescribing and, you know, a lot of stuff going on there. And Helen breaks it all down. And that book's been out for at least a year now, I think, and it's still making our top five routinely. Number four, the paperback edition of Shipwrecked and Rescued, about those cars that never made it across Lake Superior. And that brings us to our top three, our gold, silver, and bronze stars. Number three, the hardcover edition of The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by drummer, Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon. And that shows you people want a hardcover of that book so that they can keep it like a keepsake. And I do want to put a plug in here, too. If you go to markherndon.com, you can order that book from Mark and ask him to inscribe it, sign it, make a note, happy birthday, Stephanie, whatever. And Mark will send that to you. Mark's a good guy. Top two, Sassy Discovers the AME Church by B.A. Johnson, the paperback edition. That's the first of her two Sassy books, including Sassy Uncovers Peter Allen's Secret, about introducing children to the AME Church. This also is an illustrated chapter book. So, what's number one, you wonder? I'll bet you want to know, don't you, Bean?
I want to know. What is it?
I'll bet Jerry Pate wants to know, too. Submariner, 30 years of hijinks and keeping the fleet afloat by retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate. 60 chapters of memoir about naval life above and below the water, Russian spy moving across the street, leading the mission to recover the Space Challenger that exploded and had to be recovered and had the remains of the astronauts searched. There's just a whole lot of cool stuff in here. It's poignant. A couple of times it's sad, but it's a great look at the inside from the man who lived it. And Jerry tells a great story. And this book has been out, what, 4 months now, something like that? And here it landed at number one this week. Congratulations, Jerry. Congratulations to all of you.
All right. Listeners, before I get to that, I just want to go over to Twitter here real quick. Verwayne Greenhow on Twitter says, I wish you a speedy recovery. Take care, my friend.
Thanks,
Verwayne. There you go, Verwayne. And listeners, if you miss an episode, you have no excuse. Mr. G's is over there in the hospital room, and he still made it. No, I'm just kidding. I know some people have things to do, but if you missed an episode, we have every episode in the archives, and here's how you can find those.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indie archive on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenG's.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
All right. We are going to introduce tonight's guest. Doesn't really need an introduction, but just in case, we're going to go ahead and do that. But first, we are going to run an ad.
Every person has a private life and a secret self. This is true of those we know and people we only know because they are famous. Discover fascinating, intimate, clever, witty, poignant, insightful tales from a diverse roster of notable women who dare reveal both the unknown and the previously undisclosed. But these are not gossipy tales. No, they are personal, anecdotal, always meaningful stories for quiet reading, sharing aloud, even performing from the stage. Compiled by Detroit playwright Jay Ajluni, Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy, 65 fascinating excerpts from the memoirs of famous and infamous women is illustrated with whimsical portraits that capture these remarkable celebrities at their best. Choose your own from laminate hardcover, softback, and digital editions, all proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Come away with a richer appreciation of these talented women and smile for permitting them to entertain you in unexpected and delightful ways.
All right. You can find that anywhere where you get your books at. Okay, so we're going to bring in today's guest, a native of Bryant, Alabama. David Carroll has been a radio and TV personality in Chattanooga, Tennessee for more than 30 years. He started his radio career in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee before becoming the first voice on Chattanooga's KZ106 at the age of 21. Since then, he has reported on education issues and has anchored the evening news for almost 30 years. He is also the author of Chattanooga Radio and Television, which honors local broadcasting and the people who made it great. His columns are featured on ChattanoogaRadioTV.com, WRCBTV.com, and in several newspapers. He is an avid fan of the Atlanta Braves and FCC football. Parents of two adult sons, Chris and Vince, David and his wife Cindy make their home in Chattanooga. Welcome back to the show, David.
Yeah, David.
Hey, it's been a couple of years. Good to talk to you guys. Thank you.
Yeah. So, right off the bat, you're an anchor man. What's the story behind that? You know, was this something that you really wanted to do as a kid? And how long have you been doing this?
Nope, never wanted to do it. that's the first answer. I grew up a child of television, and my parents had a country store, which I worked in from the time I was six. As soon as I could reach the cash register and figure out how to make change and all that. dad worked really, really hard. You know, this was out in a rural community, and he did a lot of heavy lifting and changed people's oil and put their installed their tires. He repaired their televisions. He fixed their chainsaws. I mean, he was a guy who could fix everything and do everything. And I, as I grew up, I was the kid who ran the cash register while he was out doing things, you know, that helped people. I never learned how to do any of the things that he did because I was minding the store. But over the years, you know, when things were quiet in the store, you know, television was my entertainment. Again, I'm 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, and I'm watching, you know, Bob Barker on The Price is Right and all that stuff. And really became a fan of TV, later radio. About the time I was 12, I was addicted to Top 40 radio and listened to the local DJs and got to know them. And watching my dad work really hard and then talking to my disc jockey friends that I would call when I was 12, 13, 14 years old, you know, they would tell me how glamorous their life was. I mean, they were emceeing concerts and introducing Kenny Rogers and Bobby Sherman. They were talking to girls on the phone and playing rock and roll records and getting paid for it. There was no heavy lifting. There was no sweating. And I thought, you know, I could do that. So from the time I was 15 or 16, my voice started changing and I had a motorcycle to ride and all that. That became my goal, was to be a radio announcer, a disc jockey. And that's how I got into broadcasting. Did that for several years, became a morning guy, which is the opportunity to have a little personality, have a little fun. And that led to TV. And once I got into TV, that led to newscasting. And all these years later, I'm still doing it. But that's the long answer to your quick question, did I want to be a news anchor? It just sort of happened, and I'm still learning on the job after all these years. But I work for a great television station. They've been very kind to me, and they have allowed me to do the extracurriculars like an occasional radio show, newspaper columns, and writing books.
Well, that's right. Terrific. But Ed, did you get to meet Bobby Sherman, too? I mean, that's the burning question.
I got to meet Kenny Rogers, although that was a little later in my career. But, yeah, that's one of the perks, of course, when you're in radio and TV, is getting to meet the stars who come into town to promote their records or, you know, appear at concerts. Sometimes, you know, a record promoter would be making, like, a tour of the Southeast. And, for example, I remember Ray Stevens. Everybody remembers Ray Stevens from The Streak and Everything Is Beautiful. And he's still performing today. But I remember he would pass through occasionally, you know, just promoting his new records. And they would always stop in at the radio stations and take us out to dinner. And it was really a fun time in my life. And it's given me something to write about, too. Those were good days.
Yeah, and they're the kind of stories that people like. You know, there's fun little observations, experiences you've had, whatnot. So, well, let's talk about your first book, Chattanooga Radio and Television. This is part of, I forget the name of the company, probably remind me.
Arcadia.
Say again?
Yeah, Arcadia. They do a lot of local history books.
Yeah, and they put out, they've got a whole bunch of them, at least 100, I think, that I've seen.
Oh, countless, yeah.
And you find them like in Cracker Barrel gift shops and things like that, and people like those kinds of books. So what's in Chattanooga Radio and Television by David Carroll? What would we find in that?
Did that one about 10 years ago. Like you say, it was my first one. Chattanooga, and I suppose people all over the country could say this, but, you know, it seems like we have a rich history of broadcasters who have made an impact on people's lives. Some of them who started here went on to national fame in one form or another. Jim Nabors got his start in Chattanooga. Pat Boone was here many times. He's from Tennessee, and he did a lot of broadcasting here. And many others, but also there was a gentleman here named Luther Massengill who holds the record for the longest running broadcaster in the history of the world. He did the same show on WDEF radio from 1941 until he died in 2014. That's a 74 year span.
Wow.
He was on the same time, same station from the time he was 19 until he was 92. And again, you talk about a record that'll never be broken, there's one for you. But people like him and many others who are also locally known are just really special to the in the hearts of the baby boomers who grew up here, like myself. And it just seemed like someone needed to do a book that would document the rich history of broadcasting in this area, and especially the people that we grew up listening to and our moms and dads grew up listening to. So Arcadia has a very easy way to write a book for a newcomer like me. It's essentially a template, and they insist on quality photographs, and I was able to get a lot of great vintage photographs. And basically you write the captions for those photographs along with some chapter introductions, and voila, you got a book. So for somebody just starting out, that was probably the best introduction to book writing that I could have, because, frankly, it was just more, I guess, organization and chapter separation than it was like a true beginning, middle, end narrative of any kind. So that was a huge success, way beyond my expectations, and it laid the groundwork for everything I've done since, because in promoting the book, I would go around to churches and clubs and pivot groups and such, and I've brought along, obviously, copies of the book, but also a PowerPoint presentation with what I thought were the best photographs and the best stories in the book. And so I did about a 20, 30-minute presentation anywhere I went. People responded to it in a great way. And some of the stories were funny, just about some of the personalities. And Jim Neighbors, a good example, his story was kind of humorous as to how he went from editing film at a Chattanooga TV station to worldwide acclaim as Gomer Pyle and as a singer. So that led to the second book, which you guys published, and that gave me an opportunity to grow as a writer, because instead of a picture book, it became a collection of columns about these different people in my life.
Do you have any particular pictures in that are like your favorites, stand out to you, that you're real proud to have in there?
Well, just to me, I enjoy learning about things and people that happened before I was born or before I was old enough to really, you know, be a part of it. Like in the most recent book I've done and all the others, really, I feel like I'm a lifelong learner. And frankly, since I've written the columns and books, people have – it's one of those things that inspires people to call and say, but did you know so-and-so? Or can I share this with you, you know, something you didn't have in your book, but it's a picture or a story that we found in my granddad's house or whatever. So
wow.
My favorites are generally the older pictures and stories, you know, the ones that predate me and have taught me about history. And like in the first book, you mentioned – the gentleman Luther Massengill that I was talking about, he and his family shared their pictures. And keep in mind, Luther was born in 1922 and started out in radio in 1940. And you can imagine, you know, the treasure trove of pictures of him, you know, emceeing talent shows when he was in 10th grade, you know, welcoming Leonard Bernstein, the composer, to Chattanooga,
wow.
Picked him up at the airport. So things like that that had never previously been seen or published, those gave me a great deal of satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was always a big fan of Jim Neighbors. I liked him. He's cool. But everybody always mentions Gomer Pyle, the big peak of his career. And that was ho-ho-ho.
Oh, yeah. And to me, growing up in a rural area in Alabama, it's funny, I've become a newscaster and I've tried to hone my delivery and my articulation and try to sound professional all these years, but everybody, I won't say everybody, but a lot of people where I grew up sounded like Gomer Pyle. I mean, Jim grew up in rural Alabama too, so when he was going around saying, "Hey, Andy, what, golly," I mean, that's what I grew up listening to. And then, of course, you know, he became famous because he would do that voice in all of his characters, and they, you know, put a microphone in front of him and let him sing, and suddenly he was doing "To Dream the Impossible Dream." I mean, that's pretty rare talent right there.
Yeah, that difference between him, like if he was singing a real piece of serious piece of music, even opera, versus that going the talented man.
But you know, collecting the old pictures, there's one that I've put in a couple of books that is another one of my favorites. Chattanooga being a railroad hub has been a frequent stop for the famous for many years because celebrities and people with money back in the day, if they were going to Miami, New Orleans, whatever, you know, you had to stop in Chattanooga to change trains. And back in the 1930s, and again, this is stuff that I only learned because I researched a book, all the Major League Baseball teams would do an exhibition game at Ingle Stadium, the local baseball stadium, each year on their way back from spring training. So to have a picture of Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig, you know, in on the Chattanooga baseball field with the owner of the Chattanooga Lookouts baseball team on opening day, the first day they played in that stadium in 1931, I mean, you know, getting a picture like that is just like gold.
Okay. Incredible. Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So we're going to do a quick commercial break here. But we are talking to David Carroll, broadcaster, author, and all-around great guy. And we will be right back. Yeah, call in 516-453-9902.
Fresh Ink Group presents from author Stephen Gies. Been There, Noted That, Essays in Tribute to Life, Observations, Inspiration, Remembrance, and Noteworthies to Share. The simple lives of everyday people in a mundane world prove extraordinary in this collection of 54 personal experience essays by novelist Stephen Gies. The eclectic mix of memoir, commentary, humor, and appreciation covers a wide range of topics, each illustrated by artists and photographers from the Fresh Ink Group. Many of these essays have appeared in other book anthologies such as Chicken Soup or in popular magazines, newspapers, websites, and the author's site, www.stephengies.com. Some appear in this collection for the first time. Some pieces may resonate in ways that touch you deeply. Others might well remind you of people you've known and loved. Some convey direct messages you might want to pass along, such as appreciation for friendship, birthday wishes, and graduation congratulations. Several explore remembrance, a way to share our search for meaning as we grieve. From cautionary tales to poignant pokes at our uniquely human foibles, Gies catches what many of us miss, then considers how we might all share the most poignant of lessons. Been There, Noted That aims to reveal who we are, examine where we've been, and discover what we dare strive to become. Been There, Noted That, Essays in Tribute to Life, is available worldwide in print editions and ebook editions, including iBook, Kindle, Nook, and more. Been There, Noted That is proudly published by the Fresh Ink Group.
All right. Kind of throwback to the Bobby Sherman thing over on Twitter. Verwayne Greenhouse says, Bobby forever. My sister was crazy for Bobby Sherman. I knew a girl across the street from us who was crazy about Bobby Sherman, too. She was a teenager back when I was probably 9 or 10 years old, but she was a big Bobby Sherman fan.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah, a lot of fans for sure.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about another book by David Carroll. This one's called Volunteer Bama Dog. Now, you mentioned, you know, hey, Andy, golly. Now, that would probably be a Southernism, which I believe you talk about in this book. Isn't that right?
Yeah, one of the things that I did when I started a newspaper column about 10 years ago, I like to do as much comedy as I can, and that's the whole focus of the new book. But, you know, when you go on a newspaper website or the newspaper editorial page, there's a lot of depressing stuff on there. And, you know, frankly, the world's been kind of a troubled place for the last several years. So you have, you know, columnists on the left who are, you know, complaining about Trump, and you have columnists on the right who are complaining about Biden. And people, I just think, get burned out on that. So occasionally I might drop a little political note in there, but by and large I was trying to infuse my columns with as much light, comical stuff as I could. And I'm not a comedy writer by trade, then or now, but occasionally I would write a column. In this case, I did one on Southernisms, growing up, you know, the things that I used to hear people saying in my family store. And people my age and around there, you know, their moms and dads and granddads had all these colorful sayings that people from the North would just scratch their head, you know. And I wrote one column like that, and what I, much to my surprise, within a week, people had sent me enough, hey, you forgot about so-and-so, or what about this saying? And within a week, I had enough for a sequel. And so eventually, you know, you put together another column of different Southern sayings. And, you know, 2 weeks later, you got a third one. People are sending it in. So that became a running thing. And I would use a lot of those in my presentations, you know, live to groups, too. And just to see people's faces, you know, when you're talking about cathead biscuits and you know, some of the other things that people used to talk about and say syrup instead of syrup, you know, all the pronunciations and things that made Southern people so stand out so much. So that was a favorite one. But also in Volunteer Bama Dog, you know, there were some more serious columns and, you know, a few topics about my radio and TV career and memories. So that book holds a real special place in my heart. It's not an autobiography by any stretch, but it's a collection of about 60 columns that I think sums my life up pretty well and gave people a lot of laughs.
Yeah, and this one, it's also full of great pictures and background stuff, too. Picture of Luther in this one, is that right?
I'm pretty, without having it in front of me, I can't say, but I'm pretty, yes, there's some things about Luther.
Right up front. Babe Ruth and Gehrig, I think, is in this one, too, right?
I think so, yeah. It's funny, you know, like even with the most recent book that I've done, you know, much of the work was done like a year ago, and, you know, it's just coming out, and people will sometimes refer to something that's in it, and I'm like, gosh, I guess you say so. You know, when it's been that long, it's like, I'm not sure if I put that in there or not, but if you say so, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes it doesn't matter which one it's in, because when you have the whole David Carroll collection, then you've got them all, right?
Exactly, yeah, that's exactly true. And believe me, I never thought I'd have four, and every one that I write is my last one, so we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, they get fun. So why don't we go ahead and roll the commercial, Beam, and then we'll talk more about Volunteer Bama.
All right.
Fresh Ink Group presents Volunteer Bama Dog, a TV Guy's love letter to the South. I'm David Carroll, longtime Chattanooga broadcaster. Volunteer Bama Dog is a collection of my stories shared on TV, in newspapers, and online. From growing up in an Alabama country store to a long career in radio and television, I'll introduce you to the kinds of Southern characters we've all known or wish we knew. This collection of humor, history, trivia, and heartfelt memories serves up more than 60 essays. Drawing from my experiences with news, music, and entertainment, Volunteer Bama Dog is both educational and fun. It offers behind-the-scenes commentary on how we cover and deliver the news and on the music we grew up with. Among the book's highlights is a series of stories that recall Southernisms, or the Appalachian English that generations of Southerners still quote to this day. I try to bring that language to life, hoping you'll say, I knew people who said that, or, wait, he's been listening to me. This follow-up to my first book, Chattanooga Radio and Television, is more of a personal account of my experiences with those many wonderful people I've met and even worked alongside over the years. I hope you'll join me as Volunteer Bama Dog celebrates the stories and people of the South. Volunteer Bama Dog is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and ebook formats, including iBook, Kindle, Nook, and more. Volunteer Bama Dog is proudly published by The Fresh Ink Group.
All right. We are talking with the author of that book, David Carroll. Now, talking about the Southernisms, it kind of reminds me of Louis Grizzard used to have some funny stuff in his comedy about the differences between Northerners and Southerners.
Yeah, you know, once every blue moon, somebody will read one of my columns or something from the book, and they'll say, this reminds me of Louis Grizzard, or, you know, this is funny like what Louis Grizzard used to write. And, guys, that is the best compliment I could get. And, again, it doesn't happen often because, you know, there's one Elvis, there's one Louis Grizzard, and the rest of us are just pretenders. But for, you know, even anybody to compare anything I've written with his stuff is a great compliment.
Well, I still watch him from time to time on YouTube. It'll pop up, and I'll see something with Louis Grizzard from years ago, and I'll play it, and it's still funny to this day.
Yeah, he's I don't think any of us would say, you know, that we've modeled ourselves after him or copy him or imitate him or whatever, but I'd be a lying fool if I didn't say that his work didn't influence me. I mean, I read his column religiously when I was a younger guy, and got the chance to meet him once. He unfortunately was in the last year or two of his life. He died rather young, in his 40s, and he did a book signing here in Chattanooga probably just a year or so before he died. He was quite ill. He had cancer. But he was, you know, kind of like we're talking, you know, you're a gamer. You know, you show up when the bell rings, and he did. And, you know, I'm glad I got to tell him what a big fan I was. And obviously, you know, thousands of people did that, but he deserved all the accolades he got.
Definitely.
Yeah. Now, with a title like Volunteer Bama Dog, anybody down in that corner of the country knows what it means, but there might be somebody in, like, Washington State that they're clueless. Explain the title, Volunteer Bama Dog.
I have learned, and I'm sure you guys and your listeners have as well, coming up with a title for a book is harder than writing a book.
Yes.
I mean, I remember that book in particular, and frankly, my current one. You know, the book was done, and then it's, what am I going to call it? And you go through so many different ideas and suggestions, and you poll your family and your friends, and, you know, you just hope lightning will strike. Volunteer Bama Dog, I knew it would be different. It would get attention. People would ask about it. Some people misunderstood that it was a sports book. In fact, I can tell you that I've sold a few because people thought it was about sports, and hopefully they liked it anyway. But, you know, in Tennessee, the mascot or the nickname for the football team is the Volunteers, the Georgia Bulldogs, B-A-W-G, the Dogs, and Alabama, you know, people know it as Bama. And one of the columns that is in the book is called Volunteer Bama Dog, and I think the subtitle is How to Stand in Three Southern States at the Same Time. About a year or two before this book was complete, a friend told me about a spot about 20 miles from Chattanooga and maybe 10 miles from where I grew up, literally a spot in the woods. There's a path that leads to it where you can stand in those three states at the same time. And there aren't that many locations that are, you know, say, accessible in the nation. There may be 30, 35 places where you can do that. And I think there's a Four Corners in the West and a few others, but not many people here knew about this in our region. So took a picture, you know, kind of told the story, which included the fact that the Tennessee-Georgia line was actually incorrect because a 19th century surveyor who was going by the sun, moon, and the stars put it in the wrong place, and that led to a long battle over water because the actual Georgia-Tennessee line is in the Tennessee River, and Georgia has for years laid claim to Tennessee's water because that line was incorrectly marked back in the 1800s. So this has gone to court a few times and has never won because I think redrawing state lines now would just result in chaos. So there was an interesting story about the misdrawn line and what had become a little minor tourist attraction after I wrote about it, with people going having their pictures taken at the Tennessee-Georgia-Alabama line. And that was the subject of that column and became a rather memorable title for the book.
Wow, and if you look at the book's part of the title as a kind of a retro-looking TV set, and in it you see three shapes that come together into a nexus. That's your point, right?
Yes. Some brilliant person came up with that. Thank you very much. And that made for a nice little hook there, too.
Yeah, something people want you to explain, and then you're talking about your book. And at Fresh Ink Group, we think talking about your book is always a good thing.
Yes,
absolutely.
Indeed.
All right, so, Bean, you want to roll another commercial?
Sure. Yeah,
this
okay.
This will be about our today's guest also.
Yeah.
Hello, Chattanooga. Famous people who have visited the Tennessee Valley. Features photos, stories, and complete listings of the entertainers, athletes, political leaders, and others who visited the area since 1900. Chattanooga has attracted some of the best-known celebrities in the world, thanks to our city's historic venues, beautiful scenery, and powerful people. Hello Chattanooga features hundreds of restored photos, behind-the-scenes stories, and thousands of fully indexed entries spanning more than 700 pages. I'm David Carroll. I've worked in Chattanooga television and radio for more than 40 years. I also write a weekly newspaper column and have written two other books, Chattanooga Radio and Television, A Photo History of Chattanooga Media, and Volunteer Bama Dog, A TV Guy's Love Letter to the South, a collection of my most popular stories. Hello Chattanooga is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in a keepsake, jacketed, hardcover edition with full-color interior printing, softcover with black and white photos, and all-color ebook formats worldwide. Take a trip back in time, enjoy great memories, and maybe even settle an argument as you learn the dates and places that your favorite star, athlete, or president visited the Chattanooga area.
All right, what a segue. Tell us, David, about Hello Chattanooga. What's this one about?
Well, I'm very proud of that one, and the commercial, I thought, is a pretty good explainer on that. I will say that... you know, it's not the kind of book that would work in New York City, L.A., Chicago. You know, it's not a top 20 market kind of book because, you know, everybody famous goes there anyway, right? I mean, if you're a star, president, whatever, celebrity, athlete, you know, that's pretty routine. But in a city our size, and I don't know where we rank, probably the, I don't know, 80th, 85th largest city in the nation, when you think about cities that are not major league cities or not major entertainment centers, it's a big deal when a celebrity comes to town. You know, if Beyonce is in Los Angeles, it's ho-hum another day. If Beyonce or Usher or someone, you know, comes to Chattanooga, that's all we talk about. So over the years, it's been fun to go online and see all the social media stuff, and people would sometimes say, you know, did Elvis ever perform in Chattanooga? Were the Beatles ever in Chattanooga? You know, were the Animals, did they ever play Chattanooga? That kind of thing. Or presidents, you know, they'll say, oh, was Franklin Delano Roosevelt ever in Chattanooga? Because that's a big deal. And I had kind of collected that trivia to a degree over the years. And there was one moment that triggered this book. I'm on social media a good bit, being on television, and plus being on TV, sometimes people think that those of us who are on the news are smarter than we really are, and they'll call in and ask all sorts of random questions. One guy called me several years ago and said, I'm pretty sure Def Leppard played the UTC Chattanooga Arena sometime in the 80s, and that's when I asked my wife to marry me. And I would love to know the date that happened because I didn't keep the ticket stub. And he said, can you find out when that was? And I happened to know the guy who was the manager of that arena at the time, and I back in the 80s, and I called him. He'd since retired. And I said, Ken, you know, here's the question. Is there any way you could come up with the answer? And he said, hang tight. I'll send you the entire list of everyone who's ever played there since it opened in 1982. And I thought, okay, great. How many days or weeks am I going to have to wait for that? He said, no, just look in your inbox in about 5 minutes. So about 5 minutes to get the email with the attachment, and it's this printout, this grid, pages and pages of everybody, I guess you'd call it, the worksheet, that had everyone who'd ever performed, the date, the headliner, the opening act, the box office gross, it was all there, 40 years worth of data. And so I called the original guy back and said, hey, got some good news for you. Here's when Def Leppard played the arena. And he said, man, that is so cool. Thank you so much. And I thought, you know, I can put this online. Why not? I had the information. So I put it on my website, and people just started going crazy over it, like, man, thank you so much. You know, now – I remember, you know, where I was, you know, this night when the Doobie Brothers were here. And now I know the date that the Bee Gees played. It was my first date, whatever. And that in a nutshell is what led to the book. It started out just kind of being more focused on one or two venues. And, I kept going down more and more rabbit holes, and people started suggesting more and more places. And it became, as you know, 700 pages.
Yeah.
But people like the thoroughness of it, and I'm glad that it has brought joy to a lot of people.
Yeah,
yeah.
I pictures too. You mentioned 700 pages as the guy who edited the photos. I remember the 600 and something photos too.
There were a lot of pictures in there too. And
yeah.
that was the cool thing too, because I didn't want generic pictures. It's pictures that regular people took of either themselves posing with these celebrities, or it could be like in the case of early history I was talking about. A picture of President Theodore Roosevelt in 1903 standing on the top of Lookout Mountain. Pictures of presidents, athletes, military figures, movie stars. When you've got Bob Hope and Doris Day on the stage of a local high school that still exists today, the same stage, same school in the 1940s. Those are things that just really make people happy. And that's why I was saying, this could be done in any what I would call medium-sized city. I don't know that anybody has taken the idea and run with it, but it really worked for me.
Well, I like the fact that it's a reference book, but it's also the story, so you can actually read it, and it's just fun entertainment. If nothing else, look at the pictures. I mean, Beam, you've got a couple of pictures there, don't you? Like mine is, believe it or not, Little Debbie.
And one of the really cool things about it, a lot of us in cities our size take our performing venues for granted. We have two theaters in particular that date back to the early 1920s. I mean, the old saying, if those walls could talk, I mean, the people, the shows, the events that those arenas have hosted over the years. So I tried to bring those to life. Both of them have celebrated or will celebrate their 100th anniversary in the early part of this decade. So it was really nice to be able to pay tribute to those venues, explain why they were built, the changes over the years, and keeping them updated and restored. So it's really a tribute to those great venues as well.
The thing I found really interesting about that is, like you just mentioned, something built back in the 20s, you've got Al Jolson played there in the 20s. And then jump ahead to the 80s, and there's Def Leppard playing, and that's a little smaller city, but man, seemed to be like a hub of just a who's who, so to speak.
And it was fun going back, just finding little nuggets. Helen Keller was there, and she stood at the point there on Lookout Mountain and said she could see the seven states. You go back and find Amelia Earhart was there not long before she disappeared. You find the stories of Charles Lindbergh, Houdini, Winston Churchill. I mean, these are all black and white images for those of us who grew up in the latter half of the 20th century. But, there was a time, they were living, breathing people who were the most famous people in the world. So what were they doing in Chattanooga? And were there any anecdotes or funny stories related to their appearances? And most of the time, you go back and do the research and find out, yes, a newspaper reporter disturbed Winston Churchill in his hotel room, and, that didn't go well. The little stories like that made it even more fun.
Yeah,
I remember the Churchill part of that story. Yeah.
Another one of my favorite pictures is a feller who was credited as Boy, like Boy in Chorus or something like that. What was that?
I misunderstood. What was that again? Sorry.
Another one of my favorite pictures was a very young singer who was credited as Boy, like Boy in Chorus.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
like that. Who?
Right.
What was that?
In 1940, the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra played Memorial Auditorium, and that was the biggest big band in the nation at that time. And big bands were the thing around World War II. And primarily their instrumentalists were the stars. The drummer for that band was Buddy Rich, and Tommy Dorsey himself was, great trombonist, and you go on and on. And the next day in the paper, the review of that show at Memorial Auditorium praised Buddy Rich and Tommy Dorsey and the various other instrumentalists. And in the last paragraph, it said also appearing with the band was boy singer Frank Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That was the extent of his mention. And at that time, he was 23 years old. And a singer in a band like the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra was just kind of like, he wasn't the star. He was like every fifth or tenth song they'd have a vocalist. They had a boy singer and a girl singer. And Sinatra, at the age of 23, happened to be the boy singer at that time. And to my knowledge, that was his only visit to Chattanooga, and nobody knew who he was or who he would become. So it was a lot of fun to go back and find big, big stars who made their first appearance in Chattanooga when nobody knew who they were. Billy Graham was another one. Taylor Swift, you know, opening for New Kids on the Block. Celine Dion opening for Michael Bolton. You know, all these people who became superstars were at one time an opening act or someone in the background. I always kid about opening acts are the people who are kind of begging for some attention on stage when you're just kind of finding your seat and taking your coat off. Well, pay attention to those opening acts, because pretty soon Taylor Swift's going to be a big deal.
Yeah. Now, back in the 60s, the British Invasion, who were some of the bands from the British Invasion that came over?
We had a radio station at the time that figured out the way to put people back in the seats of an auditorium, because many venues like that suffered when television became a big deal. People were basically staying home, and they wouldn't pay money to see a live show when they could see these big names for nothing on their snowy black and white TV. So some of the radio stations figured out the only way that we're going to be able to get people back in the theaters is to do multi-star shows. And so many times in the 1960s, the biggest names in top 40 radio, many of whom were part of the British Invasion, would be on these multi-star acts they call spectaculars. So 1964, 65, 66, and so on, you know, two shows, one night, 5:30 and 9 o'clock, tickets are $3. You can see The Who, Herman's Hermits, The Animals, Neil Diamond, Kenny Rogers, Leslie Gore. 6 months later, you know, it'd be an all-new lineup, saying, you know, whoever was hot on the charts. Paul Revere and the Raiders, Bobby Sherman, Kenny Rogers, Neil Diamond. It's crazy. But that was what got people back in these theaters and probably saved our auditorium.
Well, you know, it's timely that you mentioned The Who. Today's Keith Moon's birthday. He would have been 77 had he survived. Now, there's a picture in there of, I believe it's Roger Daltrey and Keith Moon sitting on a pier in their swimsuits.
Yeah, Chickamauga Dam. And Peter Noon of Herman's Hermits, every time they came to town, he would go skiing there at Chickamauga Dam. And, you know, there was never any fanfare. There was never any advanced publicity of, hey, you know, go out to the lake today and see Keith Moon and Roger Daltrey and Peter Noon and whoever else was out there. That was their way of kind of, you know, just unwinding the day after a show.
So it wasn't meant as a public appearance. It was just kind of hanging out.
Right. And to get those pictures, you know, from 15-year-old girls back then who took these pictures, again, you know, I'm just so grateful that people came through with these candid shots, because I guarantee you, you know, that day on the lake, none of these guys thought those pictures would end up in a book 50 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went here of Noon signing autographs for a couple of teenage girls. And boy, I'll bet you women now still have those pictures.
Sure. You know, and the stories they can tell. I mean, yeah. Me and Tammy just went out to the lake that day, and guess who was there?
Yeah. I'm looking at Waylon Jennings at Memorial Auditorium. This is a very cool picture, too. Are there any pictures in this book of performances that you were actually at?
Yes. I think there's one of me and Tom Jones in the book. Whenever I've put the caption online, it's a picture of me and Tom Jones. I always caption it by saying, pictured here is one of the world's great entertainers, and on the right is Tom Jones. But over the years, that was one of the fun things about collecting all the dates, because not in the book, but in my own listings, I would put an asterisk by everybody, you know, the shows that I went to personally. And for me, you know, just sometimes you forget, you know, I mean, you just go, by golly, yeah, I did see Rod Stewart that night. He was kicking soccer balls into the audience. And yes, I did see Lionel Richie and the Pointer Sisters. And on that night, the Pointer Sisters were the opening act, and they had everybody in such a frenzy that, you know, we were kind of tuckered out when Lionel Richie took the stage. So, you know, you just all, just seeing those listings, that's what's been fun about promoting this book to audiences is them telling their story of, yeah, you know, my first date was back in the 70s when the Bee Gees came. At that time, they were in kind of a career funk, and a year later, Saturday Night Fever came out, and they certainly wouldn't play a city the size of Chattanooga after that.
No, they were playing stadiums by then.
Yeah. By then, yeah, they were out of our reach.
Yeah, speaking of people who got a little bit big, I'm looking at Dolly Parton with Porter Wagoner. Boy, that's a classic right there. Of course, and one better yet, flip a couple of pages ahead. Here's Donna Douglas, Ellie Mae Clampett.
Yes, and that was a period of time that's probably what I would call the wheelhouse for people who bought this book. You know, I hope people of all ages like it, but people who grew up in the 60s and 70s and 80s, that was just a magical time. I mean, it wasn't quite like today when you're bombarded by celebrities on 100 different channels and on the Internet. You know, back then, gosh, you know, Ellie Mae coming to town, Dolly Parton performing locally. I mean, wow, you know, that's just like crazy. They weren't in front of our eyes every day on some platform or screen. And we would hear them on the radio or see them on TV once a week. But when they came to town, and, you know, I think there are a couple pictures in there from what we would call the March of Dimes Telerama, which was an annual event that one of the local TV stations did. And the TV networks would cooperate by sending the celebrities like Ellie Mae and Little Joe from Bonanza and people like that to towns like ours to raise money for the March of Dimes. And those were huge in our childhood. I mean, you know, once a year our local theater had these network TV stars on stage, and they would raise money to help disabled children. Just huge. And that was just like a big part of our lives when we were kids. So to have, you know, the few remaining pictures from that era, because, you know, no videotapes exist, is really something special to people.
Wow. Now, one of our listeners, he's a regular, and he's been on this program a time or two, Verwayne Greenhow, he's got a question for you. He wants to know, if you could interview any three personalities in the world, who would you talk with?
So he doesn't say living or dead, right?
No, but let's just open it up, living or dead.
Yeah, I have some regrets of people who passed away before I had the chance to either see them or interview them. Obviously, Elvis is number one. Couple interesting stories in the books about Elvis, and that even though he was in Nashville a good bit and obviously Memphis for much of his life, he was only an occasional visitor to Chattanooga. He never played here. For whatever reason, I think maybe by the time he became big, none of our theaters were big enough to hold his audience, I suppose. He performed always near here, like Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Huntsville, that sort of thing, Nashville. But Elvis made a few rather clandestine appearances to Chattanooga to stay at the hotel, the Reed House, from time to time. He, back in the choo-choo days when Chattanooga was a big railroad hub, he visited the choo-choo. There were some iconic pictures of him taken there. Never got to meet him, though, and he performed a concert in Huntsville the year it turned out before he died. My sister went, and I think I told her, I'll go next time. And obviously there was no next time, so I'll always regret that. As far as other people that I didn't meet or didn't get a chance to talk to, Ronald Reagan was here in the 80s. I would have really liked to have interviewed him, just because I guess he was a big part of my life at that time. I was just starting in broadcasting, and he was just such a larger-than-life figure. I think that would have been fascinating. And I've never met Oprah. If Oprah has been in Chattanooga, I'm not aware of it. But, again, you know, what a fascinating life. And she got her start in broadcasting, much like many of us, humble beginnings at a radio station in Tennessee, later a TV station in Nashville. And to have accumulated the wealth and power and fame that she has, I mean, I think she's an amazing story. So I'd probably put those either at or right into the top three.
Okay.
So, we're going top five. You're talking to the other two right now. So, boy, what a charmed life you live.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So we got another book out of this guy, Beam. What do you think?
I won't be your escape goat. And this one, just looking through it, this was a funny, funny book. So where did this idea come from?
Well, that was the goal, Beam. That was the goal. And Stephen, much to his credit, worked long and hard to help make this look so good. Actually, you know, everybody at Fresh Ink did, and I'm so appreciative. This book was an outgrowth of the newspaper columns in that one of the funny columns I did some time back was a sort of an essay and a collection of funny things I'd seen on Facebook, funny signs I'd seen on the highway, funny mistakes I'd seen in church bulletins, funny instances people had written where they had either misspelled something or misinterpreted something, maybe their autocorrect or voice-to-text had changed the meaning of something they intended to say, but they were all funny. And we've all done them. You know, we've all texted something to someone we regretted later. We've all misunderstood a word or misspelled a word, and we've been embarrassed about it later. We've misheard something, and then someone corrects us, and we laugh about it. And there's just a never-ending gold mine of these on social media. So I wrote a column and got great response. People sent in more, did another column. I think it's about at 12 columns now, and I thought at some point this would be a good idea to organize these little bloopers into different categories. Some of them are about schools. Some of them are about medical conditions. Some of them are about legal issues, but, you know, different categories, and turn it into a book. So it was just a real joy to write. I think Stephen mentioned a while ago the little snarky comments I would make after these mistakes, which is intended to make these funnier, and people seem to react well to that. So this was done with one goal in mind, and that was to make people laugh. We have had a rough 2 or 3 years with the pandemic and inflation and all the other things people are complaining about, and I thought, this is my little gift to the world here, and I don't know how many people are going to receive this gift, but if it makes people laugh, then God bless them. We need a little bit of that.
Definitely.
Yeah, I know when Stephen and I were proofreading it on Skype, he had it open on his end, and we're kind of going through there making sure that everything looks right, and we're just laughing. I mean, turn the page, we're laughing. Turn the page, laughing. So it definitely made us laugh.
And that's been the early reaction. It's really not quite out yet, but I've made sure that some folks close to me have copies. And so far, I've been able to even sit and witness some people read it and hear them laugh out loud. And that's just the best. It's something, I think the funniest things, again, not being a professional comedy writer, you know, when I see a great sitcom on TV, someone wrote that, and 99 times out of 100, it's based on something that happened in their life or someone they know, their life. And that's the beauty of this book. We can all relate to it because we've all either seen these mistakes, made these mistakes, and finally, I think I'm the first one to put a collection of them in one book, and it's just page after page after page of these laugh out loud bloopers, as I call them. And the best humor, I think, comes from real life, and it proves the old thing: you can't make this stuff up. I mean, this is stuff that's literally right out of people's Facebook pages or texts, and the funniest stuff is the things we've all experienced or done.
Yeah, a lot of these even go to the point of irony, you know, like spelling bee champion, you know, or weather forces Holmes County spelling bee to be moved to Thursday.
and like one of my favorites is a sign. I took this picture, and it was here in Chattanooga, and it's, one of those little traffic cones that keeps us from, you know, parking in the wrong place or whatever. So, and there's a sign attached to it, and it says, COVID testing in the rear. And this little traffic cone sign is meant to get you to park in the back of that building. But my take on it was COVID testing in the rear. Hold on. That's not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's little things like that just out of everyday life that make me laugh.
It makes me wonder, does that encourage people or discourage people?
I have a feeling some people may have turned around and went home when they saw that.
Yeah. Well, now, who's Mike Salter, and what was his contribution?
Man, Mike Salter is just a cool dude. I had actually met him decades ago, and we never really were friends or anything like that. We were just kind of acquaintances, and I'd lost track of him. He was the art director for Chatham Drugs here in Chattanooga, which is well-known for Icy Hot and, I'm forgetting some of their products, Goody Powders, you know, various little medications that have been on the market for decades. Well, Mike was their advertising artist and all that, and just retired a couple of years ago. He's also a drummer. But I noticed from our friendship on Facebook that he would occasionally post some artwork, and it was just different illustrations of things that were amusing to him. And when I started to put together this book, I thought, you know, it'd be better if it wasn't just text, if it wasn't, you know, pages of joke, 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 text, text, text. It would be better if there was something to break that up. And I had lunch with him one day and read him some of the jokes, and he loved it. And I said, you know, is there any chance that you could illustrate the cover and also some pages that would kind of send the jokes, you know, to their completion, hit a home run with a visual instead of a written joke? And he said, absolutely. You know, he said, why don't you pick out about 15 or 20 of the jokes you feel like would be best illustrated by me. So I did, and we had three or four lunches, and he would bring me updates of what he was working on, and it just makes the book pop. I've had friends compare it to the cartoons they saw growing up in Mad Magazine, and again, yeah, the ultimate compliment. Mad had some brilliant illustrators.
Yeah.
Oh, so to have his talent in this book is just wonderful.
Yeah, definitely.
You also had a woman helping you put these together, is that right? She helped find
There was a young lady I work with who, Jordan Rodzinski at my television station, who is much smarter at doing things online than I am. So when I started trying to organize this book, you know, I would just be sitting there staring at my screen like, I don't know what I'm doing. And God bless her, you know, I'd call her over and, you know, she would very kindly, without saying goofy, you know, she would just say, yeah, let me help you get started on that. Here's all you need to do. Click here. Okay, now scroll down to this, and now click that, and boom, now do it. So God bless, you know, people like that. Obviously, she's much younger than me, and that right there should tell you a lot. She knows what she's doing, and I don't.
Yeah, if she can help you out of a jam without saying, well, bless your heart, then you're doing great, right?
Yeah, she did it without being judgmental or condescending, and I'm appreciative of that.
So are you interested in people sharing these with you? You want to collect book? What's going on with that?
Yeah, and that's really the basis of everything I do. A column I wrote last week is kind of a humor column. It's called Neither for President, and that's based on a poll that I read a few weeks ago that indicated that 32% of the people CNN polled wanted Biden for president. 32% of the people CNN polled wanted Trump for president, and 36% said neither. So I wrote a whole column on me changing my name to Nick Neither and listed the reasons why I think I could win, you know, with that name on the ballot. And, you know, there's some funny stuff mixed in there. But the response I've gotten from that, with people kind of adding on to what I had started, you know, I know I'm going to do a sequel to that column. And the same thing with this. I fully expect to get more every day on Facebook or email. Somebody sends me a picture or a screenshot of some mistake that they saw or a text they got that was funny. I mean, Stephen, you know, I was adding on stuff to this book even, you know, when you guys pretty much had put it to bed. And that's kind of what keeps it going. But, yeah, I love for people to send me stuff, and they're very kind to do that.
Cool. Now, with all the different books that you have out and the fact that you're the anchor guy and people know you, what kind of fan reaction are you getting to the books that you've released so far?
It's all been good. I'm so blessed in that, you know, being on television kind of gives me a little bit of an advantage over an unknown author in my own market. And it's not that I'm a household name here. I'm not trying to say that. But just by the fact that I do have a healthy number of people who follow me on social media and people who have seen me speak somewhere. And, you know, if I do well at their club meeting, you know, somebody at that club meeting might say, hey, I belong to the such and such club over in the next county. Would you come speak with us? And, you know, the fact that I have that foot in the door helps me a lot. And so the response I get to my personal appearances and books is what leads me on to whatever the next project is. And I love making people happy. I love feeling like I've given them a good value for their dollar. I love being able to put out books that people think enough of that they buy them as gifts for someone they love. I mean, how much of a compliment is that for, you know, the day after Christmas for people to send you messages saying, you know, my husband gave me your book for Christmas. It's my favorite gift out of everything under the tree, or I'd been wanting it, and how did he know I wanted this? I mean, guys, there is no better feeling to know that something that you've created turned into someone's gift. I mean, wow, you know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you know, and I don't take that lightly. So, you know, that kind of response is what encourages me to try to create something that people will like.
Yeah. Now, we don't want to give the impression that your books sell around the Chattanooga area, because they do. They do very well. But they sell all over the country, and they sell in other countries, and there's just an interest in that kind of history. And in this case, with a scapegoat, you're going to find a really broad audience, because that kind of humor, everybody sees. Everybody sees it every day. And they every now and then they think, well, I'd like to have a book of those. Well, David Carroll has just done it. And it's a lot of fun. And adding those snarky comments, that made us laugh twice as hard. So we thoroughly enjoyed it. And we look forward
That's important. That's important. And, you know, I sold a copy of Hello Chattanooga to someone in Australia who is from here, from Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. And I guess he got wind of the book and said, you know, hey, I'd love to have it. And the experience of tracking that package, my book, and its journey from Chattanooga to Australia inspired a column, because it got to be ridiculous. It was so ridiculous, it became funny tracking all the cities that it landed in before it eventually got to his home. It was about a month-long journey. And, you know, it's fun to be able to take, again, everyday experiences and mine them into some laughter, because that book, $55 postage, $55 to get from Chattanooga to Australia. But that book ended up in 15 cities, all the way from the East Coast down to Florida, to the West Coast, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and a couple of stops in between, and then on to Australia, where it had an interesting journey as well. But I'm thinking, you know, $55 in my SUV would get me from here to Birmingham. But
yeah,
that book, you know, basically took a trip around the world. And it was a long trip, longer than it should have been, but the guy who bought it and myself just had this ongoing exchange. We were tracking it, you know, online, and it just became hilarious, the journey it made that both of us were so envious of.
Hmm. Yeah, I like the fact that you are so accessible like that. Now, someone's around the Chattanooga area, and it's a fairly wide TV audience area that comes out of Chattanooga. All they got to do is turn on the TV 5 days a week, and they can spend some time with you. I assume to find out about your appearances and things like that, they can go to your website and find out, you know, where you're going to be or what else is going on with talk to you.
Yeah, I try to keep that going and generally always try to do some book signings. that there's a local grocery store chain called Food City, and I have so many great friends there. They have been more than kind the last couple of books to let me do book signings there. And you might think, well, you know, supermarket, that's an odd place for a book signing. And it is. But they always, you know, set me up in a very visible place. They promote it that I'm going to be there. I usually do a couple of hours on a Saturday morning, then go to another store a couple hours on Saturday afternoon. And during the holiday season especially, you know, people are looking for unique gifts. And as I say, you know, what do you get for the person who has everything? Well, if they don't have this book, they don't have everything yet, you know. So it's been a real blessing to have a partnership with non-traditional places to get books. I've done book signings in restaurants. I've done them in, like, I guess you call them antique or resale shops. And I have done them in bookstores as well. But it's, you know, just really fun to be able to see people in person. And you know, one thing I did not appreciate or really know until I got in, started writing books, is just how important it is to make that connection, and that people really, you know, are kind enough to want and ask for an autographed copy. I'm honored by that, and that's one reason I really love to sell them from my website, because I sign every one of them, and when people buy a book off my website, there's a place on there to put any special instructions, like to Stephen or to Beam or happy anniversary, and I love personalizing them like that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, readers expect some accessibility out of their authors these days with the rise of social media and so many contact people. Now, around Chattanooga, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting David Carroll, but what about people outside of Tennessee? How do they find you? What, your website, your what social media you're on, your contact information? Let's get some people connected to David Carroll.
Yes, I'd love that. Twitter or X or whatever it's called these days, very simple, David Carroll 3. Last name is spelled C-A-R-R-O-L-L, and the number 3 because that's my TV channel. ChattanoogaRadioTV.com is the website, and that's a little, you know, little long, but my exclamation for that is radio came before TV, and, you know, Chattanooga's where I am, so it's ChattanoogaRadioTV.com, and that has all of my columns, all of my blogs, a ton of pictures, the instructions on how to buy the book, and the link to go to PayPal to actually purchase the book. Facebook, gosh, I think it's David Carroll 3 or something like that, but I'm pretty easy to find on Facebook too. But that's been, you know, a big part of my experience in getting the word out about my books and making that connection with readers and potential readers.
All right, so our guest is David Carroll. He's got 4 books out there, people, that you want to get out and check out, Chattanooga Radio and Television, Volunteer Bama Dog, Hello Chattanooga, and Now I Won't Be Your Escape Goat. And I'll bet you there's going to be a follow-up to that Escape Goat one, too, so keep your eyes peeled. And, of course, any of our guests on the show, if anybody wants to try to get a hold of them, send a note, get some info, we have a contact form at freshinkgroup.com. We will always pass along your notes to our guests. And David Carroll seems to be the kind of fellow who would be happy to hear from you. So go ahead, send a note. If you can't find him, we'll find him for you. David, it's been a fun one.
And I want to – one thing you touched on earlier, I want to say hello to Dave Hooker. I don't know if you know this or not, but I connected Dave with Fresh Ink, and I'm thrilled to hear that his book is coming out soon.
Yeah. Probably next week's show. So that's cool. Dave's a good guy. He's been real fun to work with, and we of course appreciate the referrals. He said good things about you, too, but I'm not going to repeat it.
Well, he called me a while back and said, hey, you know, I like your book. What recommendation would you have on a publisher for me? And I said, just go to my guys. And so I'm glad he did.
Yeah, we really appreciate that. All right, thanks again, David. And I do want to give a quick shout-out to the staff here at Grandview Medical Center, because these nurses, whose job is to make sure I'm not bleeding to death in here, keep sticking their heads in, seeing my little sign saying I'm on a live podcast. They say, ooh, okay, and they go. So thank you. I appreciate the consideration when you're trying to do your job. And it's an important job. There's no question about that. So next week, we're going to have Barney Smith, who does graphic comics and owns his own publishing company. What do we got after that, Dean?
After that, we've got CJ Peterson. She's making a return visit. And following that...
Yeah, her podcast co-host also, Michael Clifton, is going to be on the week after CJ Peterson.
Then the next two are going to be reruns. The first one's going to be, we're going to have a memorial sort of to Caleb Pirtle, who was our guest last year, and he passed away on August 2nd, and so we're going to rerun that episode, so be sure to tune in for that. And then after that,
the other rerun is going to be Carlisle Towns, who right now has the book The Calling Dream, which has been usually in our top five bestsellers for the last month or so. So Carlisle Towns.
Then after that is Ron and Zach Tippins. They make up the Michigan prog rock band Wide Track, and they've got a brand new album coming out, and excellent album. If you haven't checked out my review of it, go to beamweeks.wordpress.com or beamweeks.com and read my review of the new album. And after that?
After that, we're getting back into comic book publishing again with Dan Price and Casey T. Allen, who are all in it real thick, and we're interested in learning more about what they're up to.
And then after that is Zeta Alfaro. She is an author and a singer, and she's got music to share and books. And be sure to tune in for that one.
Yeah. So remember, subscribe to the newsletter so you can get the links for the weekly shows and find out who our upcoming guests are and see what else is going on with Fresh In Group authors. Our guest tonight has been David Carroll. David, thanks again for coming on. You're always
a pleasure. Thank you, David.
Guys, really appreciate what you do. Y'all are the best in the world at what you do, and you've added a lot to my life. Thanks again.
Well, thanks. All right. We'll see everybody next week. We're going to roll a couple more commercials on the way out. We'll see you then.
All right. See you later, everybody.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Joan. We would like you to join us on Meet the Author podcast live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time in the U.S.
Yeah, Meet the Author podcast is a live video broadcast produced in association with WLFE-B Radio, airing on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Shortly after each episode ends, it's released on a dozen major podcast platforms.
We have casual conversations with authors of many genres. You will often hear humorous stories from their lives or sometimes some very poignant stories. Some of these people have overcome great obstacles to become authors. However, it's always a fun time.
It always is. So come join the fun, make comments, ask questions. We hope to see you at Meet the Author podcast live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find all the program links at indiebooksource.com. Until then.
That's all, folks.
More than 6,000 shipwrecks have been recorded on the Great Lakes, but only one offers a true life adventure, like the 1926 rescue of the city of Bangor off the Keweenaw Peninsula in Upper Michigan. A fierce November storm tossed the ship with a crew of 23 and 240 new Chrysler automobiles onto a Lake Superior reef. For the first time, Shipwrecked and Rescued, Cars and Crew tells the near-tragic story of the deep snow and near-zero temperatures. Journalist and historian Larry Jorgensen's detailed research and collection of historical photos chronicles what happened, introduces the key players, and finally reveals the fate of those collector's prizes in the century since. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Shipwrecked and Rescued is available worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats.
You've been a part of Voice of Indie, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.